At 16, he said, "Hey, you always got to try. If you don't try, you're like a certified loser." Like,
dude.
At 16 years old, like, Max, you're awesome. I love
one
that.
Of the good guys, man.
All right, welcome back to Two Fight Fans Podcast. I'm your first fan, Colin.
And I'm the other Stuart.
Today, I want to ask you a few things here, Stu.
All right.
Because after coming off of UFC 300, thinking about it a little bit.
You love the BMF belt. It's your favorite thing in the world.
I used to hate it a lot, and now I'm like... I am mid on it now. I don't know. I just don't know where to go with it here. So why don't you tell me, what are your thoughts on the BMF belt?
Oh, I mean, it's not to be like a killjoy, but like it's fine, right? Like, I understand where it came from contractually. It's going to exist. No amount of like fan backlash is really going to stop it, and it seems like the fans do like it. So I feel a bit like Dr. Strangelove, right? I've learned to stop worrying about it and just kind of embrace it, that it's a thing that's here. it's right. It's kind of like it's going to be here. It doesn't mean anything to me, right? You can put 10,000 belts on every fight, and I think that's dumb, but that doesn't like stop the fights from being good and doesn't... It doesn't negate anything that I like or why I watch the sport, right? Mm. I put up with all the stupid bullshit in the face, the pain, and the gladiator and the blah, blah, blah for the fights. So, yeah. So where are you at on it?
So the first thing about it was like, it seemed super gimmicky and was like very like... It was like how I talked about before with you way, way back when, how I felt like the UFC was almost like shifting into like a weird WWE style thing where it was like, this belt means nothing. Why does this exist? You know? And like, even just looking back on how it started off, it started in welterweight with Masvidal, Nate Diaz.
Yeah. And it was Nate Diaz's idea.
Well, it was him. He was just saying, like, I'm the baddest motherfucker. Like this is the belt we're fighting for. He was just, like, talking. And then Dana White was like, yeah, that sounds good. Let's do that. Like he was just saying Nate Diaz things, you know? And then, yeah. You know, so it happened first at welterweight. And then nothing happened with it for, like, years. So then Gaethje and Poirier have their fight. And it drops down to lightweight. So it just goes from, like, weight class to weight class there. It wasn't like... And Masvidal didn't fight either one of them for it, you know? So it wasn't like one of them moved up to welterweight or he moved down to lightweight. It was just like, there's a new one that we're doing, you know? So I, like...
Yeah, because it was supposed to be just one and done. Dana was so adamant about it being one and done. It's not a thing to be defended. It was just for that... Because was that one... Yeah, that was a the 2019 Madison Square Garden card.
Yeah.
And if I remember correctly, it was supposed to be... I'm trying to remember if there was supposed to be a title fight on that, and then it fell through. But it doesn't look like there is. So it was just them trying to find something to put at the top of that pay-per-view.
Mm.
Because I think right after this, did Jorge Masvidal lose like his next like four fights?
Yeah.
Yeah, he lost to Kamaru Usman twice, and then Colby Covington, and then Gilbert Burns. So Kamaru Usman has the baddest motherfucker belt. Which means Leon Edwards has it now.
If we stuck it at welterweight, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, but like, so when it first came out, I was like, man, this is fucking stupid. Like, what's the point of this? And then when I found out, when you said, actually, like, they get pay-per-view points, I was like, okay, that's a little bit better, but still, like, this is a stupid fucking thing here. But then when I actually, like, looked at the fights on it, that came with it, they're actually like they're good fights, you know, like Masvidal and Diaz was exciting with the TKO, like the cut at the end, like at like what, the fifth round or something, or fourth round or something.
Yeah, I mean, it was all right. It was Jorge Masvidal piecing up Nate Diaz for a bunch of rounds. Like, it wasn't a hyper-competitive fight.
Right, right.
And that's more of a fight that, like, I suppose, like, really didn't need to happen. I guess Jorge Masvidal hadn't gotten his title shot yet, so if Nate Diaz had won it, maybe the title shot was at stake, so it had greater stakes other than the silly belt. But
did it kind of legitimize Masvidal? Like, he was on this, like, tear at that point and seemed, like, unstoppable, you know, and that's when he, like... But then he got the title shot, like, with, like, 4 days' notice or something, right? Because, like, wasn't that his, like, first... So, like, this kind of, like, built up his resume, I guess.
I mean, built up his resume. He only had a three-fight run that, like, in 2019, which everyone talks about how magical the Masvidal, like, 2019 year was. And there's, like, a lot of nostalgia for it. But he knocked out Darren Till, who, I mean, has not done well really ever. His, like, his best win is, what, Cowboy Cerrone? He had that horrible fight. Anyway, like, Darren Till, he was an overhyped prospect that Masvidal KO'd. The flying knee against Ben Askren was cool, like, from a highlight thing.
Yeah.
But that doesn't... That didn't really prove that he was a top 10 welterweight, right?
Yeah.
He, like, knocked out, like, an old dude who needed hip surgery in, like, a move where, great. I mean, that's literally what happened, right? Like, he got knocked out. He fought Damian Maia, and then he's like, I can't, like, I can barely walk anymore. I've needed hip surgery for years. So, like, it was not, like, Ben Askren. Everyone always says that, like, oh, the UFC lost out on that trade between Ben Askren and Demetrius Johnson. But what they failed to remember is, like, because the UFC had Ben Askren, they got to have Jorge Masvidal, right? Because without that KO, I don't think we really talk about Masvidal as much as we do now.
Okay. That's an interesting way. Yeah. That's an interesting way to see that, the effects of that trade. Okay.
Yeah, right, because it's, like, the fastest knockout in history. It's, like, now with that opening package that they play is that knockout. Anytime Jorge Masvidal's on screen, if there's any sort of video package, it involves that flying knee. And then that's what led into the fight with Nate Diaz, someone who hadn't fought in a long time and doesn't normally fight at welterweight. And then a title shot. So, like, he beat somebody who... I guess was a title contender in Darren Till, but not very good. Ben Askren, who was old and washed by that time, and then an old washed Diaz. Like, not a super impressive run in my mind. Anyway, we're going off on Jorge Masvidal, but...
But yeah, so the belt goes... Okay, it starts there, and yeah, it kind of adds to the whole, what we were talking about just there, or what I was saying, how, like, this is not really a legitimate belt, this is a gimmicky thing, it's stupid, there's no need for it for a, like, if you want to, like... I guess, legitimize the sport more or whatever. But then it transfers to Gaethje versus Poirier, which, you know, the fight, again, is entertaining. It's with two, like, game fighters, two fighters who are, like, coming up, rising up in the ranks there. Didn't Gaethje then start getting his lightweight challenge here, or?
No. So this was this last fight right before Gaethje versus Holloway.
Holloway.
Yeah.
Oh, this was immediately.
Yeah, so this okay. was, right, like, so the last one was in 2019, and then...
And then this one was
23, July. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
UFC 291. And again, it was...
Oh, right, 291, okay.
Yeah, it was just because it was supposed to be... I think there was supposed to be another title fight at the top of this card, and then it fell out, and so they decided to do five-round Poirier-Gaethje, and since it was at the top of a pay-per-view... Have to have a title involved, can't just be a number... Because, right, this was a number one contenders fight. Everyone was saying Justin should have fought Islam Makhachev, but instead he was taking this Max fight. And that's kind of how Poirier snuck in to get this title shot coming up at 302.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was a... Right, but this one had a little bit more stakes. This was a number one contenders fight, and it felt like a number one contenders fight. And a rematch of a fight of a year contender...
Yeah, so, yeah.
And, like, I guess the Masvidal Nate Diaz one, you could call it a number one contenders fight, but I don't know. I've never considered Masvidal or Diaz, like, a number one contender, especially right. while Kamaru is around. Yeah. So, but yeah. So, yeah, it's only been three fights, and this is the first time that it was, like, up for a defense. Yeah. And like within a year of a previous fight, because it had been dormant for 4 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's like they're resurrecting it now. If they keep it at, if they treat it like an actual championship belt where mm-hmm. you have to defend it, like you're not like, it, you know, and it's, I don't know, it, like you treat it as a separate championship belt. And I don't know what the criteria would be to challenge for. So I guess that would be my question is like, how do we make this belt legit? Because if we look at the progression of this from Masvidal and Diaz to Gaethje and Poirier to Max and Gaethje now, it's progressed pretty, not legitimately, but it's definitely built up now to Max and Gaethje, you know, Max Holloway mm-hmm. versus Justin Gaethje. So like, I'm not saying that it has to top what that just happened, but how can we make this, you know, how can we make this something worth watching and make it interesting?
Yeah, I mean, I think it comes down to what we talked about last time, which was like, it's the this belt, the way you keep it actually being a thing is belts are meant to confer power or like status upon the fighter who holds it, right? But it always requires the fighters to confer status on it first. It's the same thing in boxing, right? When there was... Was it the WBO, right? Of the four main belts, nobody actually gave a shit about it for a little while. I think it was the WBO one until, was it Holyfield? It was a heavyweight. It was Holyfield. Maybe it was Riddick Bowe. But until they decided, like, hey, I'll challenge for it. Because up until that point, whoever was the heavyweight champion with that belt was always seen as like, okay, well, maybe they're in the top 10. But they're not actually legit. They have no claim to being legitimately the best. So, I mean, we have this where, okay, anyone that beats Max Holloway, I mean, who beats Max Holloway? Who has beaten Max Holloway in the past, like, 10 years? It's only been Dustin Poirier, who was a interim lightweight champion and, like, multiple-time title challenger. And who might sneakily have the best, like, if you just looked at names and wins on their resume, the best resume at lightweight? And Alexander Volkanovsky, who's probably, you know, the best featherweight of all time. So anyone that beats Max is already gonna be impressive. I think probably the biggest criteria to, like, is it... You probably want to match make it in such a way where you're going to primarily have stand-up fights, and you're probably going to have, you're going to be two fighters that have a pretty high likelihood of finishing or getting finished, yeah. Right? Because that's kind of what this whole thing is meant to be, is which is so weird when it was initially Nate Diaz and Jorge Masvidal. That was a little bit more about like their like personas, but like... Jorge Masvidal, except for those two knockouts against Askren and Till, was like a decision, split decision machine. And Nate Diaz, too, was like, you know, he'd get his ass beat for the majority of a fight and then like land a good one, too. And then the crowd would cheer and he'd go, oh, I won that fight, even though we lost a decision. So it was a weird thing. But yeah, it's going to have to be matchmaking. And luckily, yeah. Lightweight is the place where you have the most action fighters at the moment.
Yes.
So you just keep doing that.
Yeah, that is the advantage that it has there if it's done right. So like I could eat, like here's the problem with this belt. Like if you had Max fight Charles Oliveira for the BMF belt, that would be great. Like that would be a great fight. It would live up to this kind of like unspoken criteria, what it represents and everything. But if you had Max fight, you know, Arman Tsarukyan for this BMF belt, no, it definitely wouldn't. And that's the thing. It's like, you have to be selective with this. Mm-hmm. And like conferring status, like you were saying, it's not a rankings thing per se. It's basically a pure entertainment thing. And, you know, as long as, I mean, the fans will benefit from it, but it's also like, you know, what do the fighters get from it? You know, there has to be some, because, you know, a lot of fighters that their goal is to become the champion, you know? Mm-hmm. So like, would this immediately add to their resume to like bounce up in the rankings? Would this, you know, obviously you can get them pay-per-view points and higher paydays or something like that. So like if they made it like, okay, whoever has fights for the BMF belt, they like if they win, their bonuses automatically double or something like that, you know? Like,
oh well, now you're talking about, is the UFC going to give anyone and the fighters any more cut of the money? And,
yeah.
The answer is no. So yeah, right. And I think like it's so silly, right? Because like they're just going to whip this thing around however they want.
Yeah.
Max is going to fight Topuria next. Then it's going to be inexorably linked to the featherweight title, right? Or is it going to be this thing where if he goes down and loses to Topuria, which I think probably will happen if he fights Topuria next, is it then he's going to be like, well, I won it at 155, so when I go back up to 155, I'm still going to like walk around with the BMF title, right? It's a weird thing. Jorge Masvidal lost a shit ton after this. I mean, I don't think he won again in the UFC.
No, I don't think
after so. After he won this title, right? Nate Diaz didn't win. Or he did. He won against Tony, the ghost of Tony Ferguson. It's a weird thing. I say just whenever you need a pay-per-view headliner, throw it on there. I think the key is to do it sparingly. Don't count it in their planning of rotation as like, well, we can just, since Max lost, we can just do a BMF title between, you know, Donk Donkerson and Rick Rickerson, just whenever they want for a pay-per-view. And then it ends up being a really boring fight, right? You have to put it on fights where you know, hey, there's, you can never truly know what the outcome will be in an MMA fight, but like, there's a really good chance that this is going to be pretty spectacular. So,
okay, hypothetically, let's say this. So Max, you know, drops back down to featherweight to challenge Topuria, which is what he says he wants to do.
Well, no, he says, did you see, he'd prefer to just wait for Connor.
Oh, Max said that?
Yeah.
Oh, I did not see that.
I think everyone's chasing, right? Topuria called out Connor. Now that, like, Connor's officially back, everyone's calling him out. So it's just about who can make themselves the most attractive for Connor. Which is weird, because I don't think putting on that performance against Gaethje is how you get Connor to fight you. I think you need to put on, like, a pretty bad fight.
Right. Or
a pretty, like, porous fight that Connor thinks he can win. If he, like, yeah.
But then that could drum up, you know, okay, that, if he was like, okay, I want Connor for the BMF belt, and he kind of drums up all this, like, oh, he's ducking me now, like, you know, that, and shit-talking Connor will always bring more legitimacy to it, and then Connor can make the whole like, oh, I'm a three belt champion now if he gets that, so that would be interesting. Okay, if he does do that, then that's like a continued lineage that I could be interested in.
I think just leave it with Max, right? Like it's the Max belt now.
Yeah,
you know.
And but that's what I was saying, like if he was going to drop down to fight Topuria, he could either like, it's like when people, like when champions challenge champions, you're not challenging for both belts, you're only challenging for one, or it could be up for grabs at featherweight. So whoever wins that will win the featherweight belt and the BMF belt.
Well, and that's like what Topuria had said he wanted. He said, like, if I'm going to sign to fight Max, it sounds like he wants to fight Max next, and the UFC has approached him about fighting Max, that he said, I want the BMF belt to also be on the line. Which again, like, I feel, I mean, who gives a shit, right? Like, it doesn't actually change anything. But if you're putting on your promoter brain, even though neither one of us are promoters, and like, then it just molds into the featherweight belt, right? Then it just becomes the lineage of the featherweight belt.
That's true.
Which is silly.
It would be sunset then, maybe.
Yeah. Only to be resurrected whenever they needed, right?
Right.
So.
Actually, did you see Topuria's response on the MMA Hour regarding Max's like performance that night?
I don't usually watch it, but I had seen like, you know, something about like he said it was not that impressive and like that he'd be able to piece him up or something.
Yeah, he basically said, I didn't see any technique. I didn't see any strategy. I didn't see any power. I didn't see anything. I didn't see any head movement. I just saw a bar fight. So like that's. Yes, that's pretty strong coming from him, and like definitely if he wants to drum up hype behind him in Holloway,
It's hard. I feel like I'm not getting the full Topuria experience because apparently, since English is his what, like, fourth language or something, like his trash talk and his like kind of swagger doesn't come through in English, but apparently in Spanish, like he has the same kind of swagger and bravado as like Conor McGregor.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like very, like even you like repeating that back, like it probably had a lot more like oomph and attitude behind it. Mm-hmm. But in English, he's trying to be like, okay, how do I translate this from this to this, you know? So it does, maybe like the intonation in his voice doesn't bring out the...
Right. Yeah. That's fair.
Yeah. I mean, I don't agree with him, but I agree that probably Topuria, after kind of seeing Max like perform so much better at 155, I think we don't get the best out of Max as fans, and probably he doesn't get it out of himself, though he gets to decide where, kind of what weight he wants to fight at. And having him go down to 145 against, I mean, a murderous puncher who has better footwork and better combinations than Justin Gaethje, I don't like Max's chances. In that
That's a tough fight.
Yeah, I think, dude, yeah, Topuria might sleep him.
Yeah.
Which is so crazy to say, especially after seeing this fight.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it would be, right, like, Topuria could then be the get the BMF belt. And then Topuria said he wants to fight Conor, and he's willing to go to 170 for it. So,
Jesus.
It's everyone's chase. I mean, I think it's this thing is they all know that it's such a big payday, and Conor is so past it that everyone is just, like, chomping at the bit, being like, oh, that's the biggest payday? That's all I have to get through?
Yeah.
That's way, like, I get paid way more for probably way less danger compared to a lot of these, like, up and coming guys. So, yeah.
Last thing I'll talk about the BMF belt here with,
it's your new favorite thing.
I used to fucking hate it. I really hated it. But, John Anik posted on Twitter, you know, comparing this fight and finish, Max Holloway and Justin Gaethje's finish to three other, like, classic highlight reel knockouts: the Silva versus Belfort front kick, the Aldo McGregor first title fight knockout, and Leon Edwards versus Kamaru Usman head kick knockout.
Mm-hmm.
And said, out of all four of those, how do you have this ranked in comparison? Because all of them are like, you know, defining, just, I mean, all four of those are on like those highlight reels that you say that whenever they do any sort of promotional event or intro or thing. So where do you rank this finish with comparison to those?
Well, I guess I'll kick that back to you and I'll ask a point of clarification. Are we talking about like the knockout itself or like the finish, like the kind of the totality of the thing?
Good question. I think his post just said, how do you rank these four knockouts?
Well, I'm asking you, like, what is the criteria you're like putting on this?
Yeah. So like that's the thing, you know, when I saw, you know, cause all these were for different belts, Silva and Belfort's knockout was just like this insane, beautiful, like it just continued to add to the mystique of Silva that he has like this unbeatable skill set. That's just like the things that he can do are like otherworldly. The Aldo McGregor knockout was, you know, this was okay. Like here's Conor McGregor and here's what he can actually do. Like, cause Aldo was like, he was also the unbeatable champion at 145. Like he was champion for so long, right? Because he had brought it from the WEC and like no one was beating him. I didn't have him. Like I had him beating Conor McGregor. And then he slept him with one punch moving backwards. Like, and I was like, what the fuck is this? Like, and then it started this whole new, you know, it started the Conor McGregor era, essentially. You know, and Leon Edwards' head kick of Kamaru Usman was like, again, another thing that I did not have in my fucking bingo card for that fight. Like there was no way I was gonna see a head kick knockout of Kamaru Usman. That just wasn't in my realm of possibilities. So all, but like, and all of them like were just these, they started a new, like, just a legacy for those fighters. Silva already kind of had his going into that, but it just was like another, like, oh yeah, that's thing Silva does, you know? And Holloway and Gaethje, like, it was just like such a, like, the setup for the knockout was what was super impressive to me and just so, like, emotional. So I don't know, because all these represent different things. So that's kind of what I wanted to ask you. Like, where do you, where does it hold stock for you? Where is its significance? Where is it, where is its, like, you know, highlight flashiness, I guess?
Yeah. It's interesting because all of these are big, like, belt moments that kind of define something. Because, like, I wouldn't even rank any of these as the best knockouts. Probably, I wouldn't rank these in the top four best knockouts I've seen in the UFC. Right, because you've got I like seeing a technique be used that I, like, haven't seen before, and a technique that has, like, been building, like, the fighter has either set it up or has been building to that moment, which you do have with, like, the Max Holloway Justin Gaethje, but that wasn't like he knew and was planning, oh, if I just throw down with him right now, I'll be able to sleep him. So, right, like, you've got the Impa Kasanganai Joaquin Buttley knockout. Do you remember that one? The jump spinning back kick.
Jump spinning back kick, yeah.
Yeah, like, that's a pretty, but it's a very low rank fight, right? But that's just so, like, cool to see that, and you're like, holy shit. Or Yair Rodriguez doing that, like, duck down back elbow to knock out
Korean Zombie, yeah.
Yeah, like, that's a pretty, talking about these, I think probably the one that, like, was the Conor McGregor one's the most memorable to me, like, just from a memorable standpoint, because it was this final showdown. Conor McGregor, Jose Aldo had been talking so much shit, and then just 13 seconds, and you still get mouth breathers on the internet, just 13 seconds, 13 seconds, 13 seconds, anytime Jose Aldo fights, and launched Conor McGregor. But I think probably the Leon Edwards, Kamaru Usman one is the most impressive to me, right? He's been battered, and I when I was watching this fight, it got to, like, I don't know, a minute into the fifth round, and I just got up and was like, I got to take a shower before I go to bed, and, like, took a shower because I was like, I got stuff to do in the morning. Like, I this is whatever. I know how this goes. And then I come back and everyone's like, holy shit, he did it.
You missed it.
I missed it entirely. And then I'm like, what? What happened? And then I turned it on. And I mean, such a beautiful setup. The fake out with the cross. Like, it's actually like technically a very, like, picture perfect kick that he threw. Amazing, right? To be beat down for so long at elevation and then knock out who was this, again, undefeatable champion. Yeah. That's really impressive, right? The Anderson Silva Vitor Belfort, we hadn't seen a front kick ever knock someone out.
Yeah, that was the first time.
But it was like Anderson throwing it for the first time in the fight. And we've done martial arts for a while. That's one of, like, the first kicks you learn in any martial arts school you walk into that isn't a Brazilian jiu-jitsu school, right? Walk into, like, Rex Kwon Do and you're going to learn that kick. Like, that's not a necessarily a novel technique. And it wasn't something that Anderson, right? It's not Anderson so masterfully set it up that, like, it perfectly hit. He threw it well. But, like, Vitor also just stood there and was like, oh, he's not going to hit. And then he got hit. So, yeah, that one, it is amazing to kind of see, but, like, it didn't blow my mind that much. So, I think Leon Edwards, the Conor McGregor one is pretty, and it also, like, the Conor McGregor one, like, kind of changed the face of MMA for a while, right?
Yeah.
Conor, it then built up, like, without that, right, if that had actually, and I think if, you know, Conor was not going to give Jose a rematch, and immediately left. Like, he never defended the belt there. But I think if Jose Aldo and him fought again, like, right after that, I'd still pick Jose Aldo to beat him. Right? Like, what we saw of Jose Aldo post that fight was, I mean, he still was phenomenal. Yeah. I mean, he's going to come back and fight a top 15, a weight class down. So, I think kind of the historical relevance of that. And then the Max Justin one. I mean, the Max Justin one has a finish, though, right? The whole setup of the fight, Max's career, what is he doing? Everyone thinking, like, leaving him for dead.
Over. Yeah.
Yeah. But it was, that finish was something where it was like, Max, like, didn't necessarily need to do that. And that makes the finish more impressive. But he had already so badly beaten Justin Gaethje.
Yeah.
That it wasn't a, you know, one hitter quitter like the Connor or this comeback on the brink of defeat like Leon Edwards.
Yeah. So
that's how I'd rank it. I mean, but okay. Whatever. It's who cares what I think. It's whatever you value, especially in these things.
Yeah. I guess it's like you said, like not necessarily the knockout itself. It's more like the legacy that it sets up afterwards.
Yeah.
You know, and the significance of that, because, you know, like with Silva, it just added to the mystique of Silva, you know.
Yeah.
With McGregor, like you said, it kind of catapulted him into this like new stratosphere of stardom. With Leon Edwards, it started his whole like, now he's the champ. So
yeah.
I guess, and we've already talked about like what this could do for Max going forward. And I think it's right up there with these that it can really kind of not like revitalize his career, but it would give him a new, like a new wind and a new direction, which is to an already very impressive and storied fight career.
Yeah, exactly. I got to shout out a couple ones that he like missed. We already talked about the Askren Masvidal one. That on Tapology has the most votes for best knockout of all time.
Okay. But do you think it's as significant as like
no,
you were just talking
no,
about?
No, it's, and it's not even that good of a knockout. It's like, all right, it was cool in the moment, but like whatever. And then like, oh yeah, it was super necessary, his whatever thing about following up on a corpse. Yeah, not a good knockout. Not that impressive. The Barbosa Terry Edom one, the first like spinning wheel kick,
spinning hook kick. Yeah. Okay.
The Kasanganai one. It's surprising in this list, but because like Holly Holm, Ronda Rousey, you think would be in this list about like a big title fight upset one. We already did Chan Sung Jung and Yair Rodriguez.
Yep.
Lyoto Machida doing his crane kick into Randy Couture and sending his tooth flying into the stands. Like where that's a good one. Where's that one?
That one's very impressive as well.
Yeah.
What about Silva versus Forrest Griffin?
I mean, again, okay, I mean, we'll get into this a little later. Spoiler alert to anyone who's, like, a huge Anderson Silva fan. I'm, like, you beat a bunch of, like, middleweights back when middleweight was, like, really bad. And Forrest Griffin.
You still hate on the middleweights, man, even 10 years ago.
Yeah, it just wasn't a good division. And, like, Anderson Silva was, like, a decent striker, and so he could style on these dudes because it was, like, you know. Is like a purple belt beating up on a white belt. It's like, hey, that's cool, I guess. The Forrest Griffin one. I do love Forrest's reaction to it. Like, if you hear interviews about him in hindsight, about how Anderson looked at him, and the look in his eyes was like, you stupid white boy, why would you do that? Is Forrest a technical savant or even technically sound? Like, if I saw somebody throwing combinations like Forrest threw in that fight in the gym, I'd be like, you probably shouldn't go have a professional fight yet. Why don't you warm up in the amateurs for a little bit?
Oh my God.
It's true. Like, go back and watch that like finishing sequence as he like plods forward, marching, throwing ones and twos, elbows entirely flared, head in front of his shoulders, chin up. Like it's not, that's why Anderson looks so disdainful and why it was so easy for him to just like bop him on the chin.
Yeah.
It's not that Anderson Silva, like everyone likes to say, can see the code and is in the matrix. It's if a fighter slowly plods forward, leaves his elbows out, and has his chin out, like it's not that hard to like find the target. That one I don't, again, right? Part of this is how impressive is the opponent as well that you're doing this to.
That's fair.
Right, like I see that rank number 20 is the Shevchenko versus Jessica Eye, when she head kicked her and Jessica Eye was out for like 20 minutes. But I was like, again, great. You basically threw a head kick on a heavy bag. Like it's not like the, okay. Like it's not that impressive. Anyway, So that's the BMF. That's the knockout. Yeah. Just let Max fight whoever he wants to fight. Max has come out, or other reporters have come out talking about Max. I know Luke Thomas has said this. Max Holloway routinely makes more than double the money he makes from the UFC each year by being a, I don't know if he's a Twitch streamer or a Facebook streamer or what platform he streams games on, but Max thinks of himself as a streamer who happens to fight in the UFC, right? So yeah, don't do this like bullshit with him where like, oh, we gotta do it, he needs to pay his dues or do whatever, or fight his way up the ranks. Like, let him just pick the best fights that can be made with him. And let's have this belt mean something for a little bit, because again, like, this era of action fighters, especially at lightweight, isn't gonna be around forever.
Yeah.
We're gonna lose Dustin, we're gonna lose Justin, we're gonna lose Holloway. Connor, I mean, I don't even know if Connor, I'll be pretty surprised if I see him fight at 303. And then you're going
to
have...
Wait, you think he may not even make it to the...
Yeah, man, have you seen him on the press tour for, like, fucking Roadhouse?
Yeah, I know,
talking about, like, him twitching and the amount of allegations that have come out against him from drug use and assaulting women and all kinds of stuff. Like,
yeah.
I'll color me skeptical.
Okay.
Right, like they're all gonna be gone soon, and the people that have that are coming up to take their place are Armin Saryukin. Fiziev is a good action fighter, but a little bit slower pace. Matej Gamrot. So we're getting back to a pretty grapple heavy style or grapple heavy meta at 155. So
yeah,
let's enjoy these guys while we can.
I know I said it already, this is the last thing, but did you see the, like, an interview that surfaced with Max Holloway when he was, like, 16 years old, and how he was still, like, basically, like, create this aura of, like, baddest motherfucker? Because he was, like, at 16, he said, hey, you always gotta try. If you don't try, you're, like, a certified loser. Like,
dude.
At 16 years old, like, Max, you're awesome. I love
one of the good guys, man. And you never hear anything bad about him from anyone. You never hear that he was a dick. He's never had any issues with the law, never had any issues with, issues with drug and alcohol is something that, you know, I know people struggle with and shouldn't be, like, looked down as, like, a moral failing. But he's never had any issues with that, never had any issues with really anything.
His parents, I think, were, like drug users and abusers. So, like, that's, like, had a really big effect on him. And that's, but he's I think he is a really good ambassador for the sport. You know, he talks just enough shit to make it interesting, but also is like this good like model here. So,
yeah, great dude. I hope he gets as much money as he can out of this thing, and I hope they put him in the fights that he wants.
Yeah. All right. What do you got for us?
All right. Well, I watched fucking Never Back Down. Oh. The three things that I don't even know where to start with this movie. It is so fun. Okay, so I looked up a little bit about it. The screenwriter for this film, because I was watching it, and part of me was like, who is this movie for? The UFC fights that are going on, one of the characters, when the like high school guy is like first learning MMA, he gets like brought to the gym, and they the kid in high school who like got him introduced to the gym trainer, he says he is a Vale Toro winner, and I'm like, do you mean Vale Tudo? Like the
that's what I thought he said.
He said Vale Toro. He like does, and I'm like, what? So like this weird thing, and then every time they're doing anything, it's this thing of the screenwriter who his only screen credit prior to this film was Homeward Bound 2. One of those ones where like the dogs and the cats talk and has like Michael J. Fox's shadow.
A classic.
Yeah, like a kid show. He wrote it because his son, who was in high school, showed him some MMA clips. And this is the period in MMA where Anderson Silva is, he's beating Dan Henderson, Nate Marquardt. He's already beaten Franklin two times. George St. Pierre's lost the belt and is, like, coming back. The next card after this movie premiered was George St. Pierre in Montreal fighting Matt Serra to reclaim his title.
Oh.
Right. Randy Couture had already come back and beat Tim Sylvia. Right, we're in, like, that era of MMA. Yeah. Rampage is the champion. So, like, it's not... People who've been watching MMA know what MMA is, right? They know how, like, techniques work. But this movie seems to be written for people that don't know anything about MMA. So it's constantly like, oh, he's going for an armbar. That can break his arm. Oh, triangle choke. Oh, rear naked. Like, they call it out, every technique that is going on screen.
Yeah, yeah.
And he'll be like, this is MMA. You can't just do boxing. You got to throw in some Muay Thai. And then he'll throw a leg kick, right? This, like, weird, it's like walking you through, in case you've never heard of martial arts. They're trying to, like, hit you with a glossary of martial arts stuff. But then I was like, but what, like, 45-year-old man is watching this and is like, you know what? This is my shit. A bunch of, like, rich high schoolers in Orlando having an underground fight club learning MMA. It was, like, such a weird fucking – I was like, what? What is – and then there are multiple scenes where the – there's when he first gets introduced to the, like, the fight club, which apparently there's, like, 7,000 kids at this fucking high school, and they the only thing they care about
is, right, fighting.
Is fighting. There's no team sports, there's no other clubs, there's not a single person who has, like, acne or is going through, like, puberty and, like, putting on a little extra weight or, like, is too skinny. Like, everyone is gorgeous, everyone has perfect skin. They only give a shit about fighting, and they all go to this one rich kid's house in, like, a mansion that has no furniture, right? It's, like, this, like, model home that they find, and they throw. And again, it's, like, it feels like the screenwriter was a nerd in high school and never got invited to a party, and he's like, this is how it was. Everyone else in high school were going to these parties, and this is what they were doing. But there's a scene, we're in high school, remind you, where there are two topless women and you see them with their tops off. It's not like, oh, they're coy and they hide it. You get full nipple and they're, like, making out in the bathtub. And I'm like, we don't know at this moment that those people aren't minors, right? Like, there's no – this isn't, like, just the senior class going. This, it feels like it's the whole fucking high school because there's hundreds of kids at this thing. So I'm like, this is really weird. Like, why are we having this weird voyeuristic view into these high schoolers doing this stuff? And then I see, like, what's supposed to be high schoolers topless. This is very odd. I don't like this. Please stop. So I'm like, okay, who is this movie for? I looked it up. This had been originally filmed as a rated R movie. So again, oh, really? Is this meant for high schoolers? Because it's all about, like, the lives of high schoolers and the drama that they feel. And then, like, I'm going to become this underground fighting person in high school. Why would you set it there? Why would you do any of this, right? Like, why not have it be, like, adult, or, like, a college kid, right? He goes to college at Orlando, right? He goes to college in Florida somewhere. And then, like, on the college campus, he gets a scholarship for something. I don't know. And the fight scene sucked so hard because it was just like it was clear they looked up, like, okay, what are, like, the quote unquote, like, most popular moves in MMA, and it was like, okay, leg kick. And so there's, like, anytime a leg kick happens, it's like the person just stands there and the other person does, like, the biggest wind up and, like, setup and throws the leg kick, and then he's like, oh, it hit him, all right, now my turn for a move, Superman punch. And you're like, what is Why is this how the fight scene is choreographed? It was, I'm not even gonna take the piss out of the movie for, like, you know, he like assaults at one point. He's like, I'm angry because my dad died, and then like these three guys get out of a yellow Hummer and, like, assault him, and they're, like, adult men, and he's able to, like, do again. He does, like, a double leg takedown as if he was on a high school wrestling mat and, like, drives his knee into the asphalt and then, like, perfectly picks this guy up and, like, drops him on his head. And basically assaults and, like, almost kills, like, three dudes, and no cops ever get involved. It's all filmed too and put on this website.
His friend films it.
Yeah. Real Fights 4, numeral 4, real.com. And, like, apparently that's this, like, oh, and that's another thing, too. He comes to this fucking high school, and this guy's like, bro, I saw you fight. You were the white and gold football team, so you were the good one, and you fought the black and red evil football team in Iowa. And I saw you beat up that one kid. And he's like, how do you know about that? He's like, dude, the internet. You can get anything on there. And I'm like, again, if this was made for high school students, like, we were in high school in 2008 when this came out. Like, we knew what the internet was, right? Like, it felt like this movie was written for a 45-year-old who was like, how would they have figured that out? Oh, yes, the internet, that new thing I've heard about, right? Like, they didn't realize you could find videos online. Right, and when he leaves his hometown in Iowa, he's like, I'm gonna miss all you guys. And he's like, yeah, well, one day we can meet up in Florida. And it's like, the fucking iPhone existed at this point, right? Like, it's not like he's acting like there's no way of communicating. Like, AOL chat messenger been around for fucking ever. Like, you think that there's no way to communicate with these people? And he never does. He's like having this heartfelt goodbye with all of his friends. And then he never once talks to them again or does any. He's, well, like, what a dickhead. Yeah. And then he goes to this insane school where everyone's obsessed with fighting and it doesn't make any sense. And, like, and then Amber Heard's character is, like, upset because she's like, I wasn't popular when I first moved here. So I started dating this guy who, like, this one guy who's, like, the head of the fighting thing. Which is interesting. I looked, okay, so the main actor and then the main villain, I was watching it and I was like, wow, these guys really look like Tom Cruise and Brad Pitt. Like, they look like the young versions of these guys. And so I looked up these actors and the first article that comes up is like Sean Ferris was like touted as like the next Tom Cruise. He looked like Tom Cruise. His voice was kind of like Tom Cruise. Like, everyone in the Hollywood system was talking about, like, hey, we've got like young Tom Cruise again. And then this other guy, it was the same thing. He was like young Brad Pitt. And I was like, what a weird, like, what? You can tell that they were like, well, we want the Fight Club leader has to look like Brad Pitt from Fight Club. So we'll hire this actor. And then we'll have like Tom Cruise because he's the next big guy. And it was like, anyway, it obviously doesn't make any sense. And like trying to look at it from that lens, like, doesn't make any sense. But then you're like, okay, so maybe the point is that it's like a bad movie, but like an MMA fan would like it because there'll be a lot of like Easter eggs to MMA things. There's not an MMA fighter in it. There's no like mention of like any, like, you know, everything is all like really bad MMA. And like very talking down to you. They're like, oh, what you have to learn is to breathe when you throw the round kick. Oh, okay. And then he's like, ah, look out. There was a triangle choke. And you're like, okay. It was just so fucking, it was just so stupid. And it was stupid in the point where I'm like, I don't know who this was meant to be for. Who is this movie for? Because it's not for a teenager watching this because it obviously doesn't understand how, right? Like the high school interaction scenes were so fucking stupid. Like, Amber Heard's character says to her abusive boyfriend, like, I don't want to date you anymore. And he's like, don't you remember who you were before you met me? You were like a ghost walking around. No one would talk to you. And I was like, that is not how a human being talks to their girlfriend when they're breaking up. And if he's meant to be abusive, like, who uses that kind of like, it doesn't make any sense. Yeah, it was.
My God.
And then also, right, okay, so let's say it's not. Let's say this isn't for MMA fans. This is meant to, like, introduce people to MMA. Who gives a fuck about a bunch of high schoolers in Orlando, right? Like, who cares? Who cares about their lives? And it's not even, like, a Breakfast at Tiffany's or, like, Fast Times at Ridgemont High where you're like, oh, these characters are endearing or interesting. It's, like, all of them just kind of, like, squint at each other and, like, say weird, inane, bullshitty things. And then there's MMA. Dude, the amount of montages in this fucking – oh, that's another – okay. So every – he has, like, six training scenes. All of them are him doing CrossFit. They're not even him doing it. It's, like, him, like – they've, like, put a ladder between two pallets, and then he's, like monkey barsing across the ladder, and then he's, like, doing pull-ups and flipping a tire, like – it's not even him doing MMA because when he does punch the heavy bag, the guy has the Forrest Griffin flared out elbows leaning way forward, like not rechambering his punches. It's so fucking bad. And all of the fight scenes are that horrible thing in 2008 where it's like the slow-mo, the person doing the setup of the kick, and then speed up the like the impact of the kick. So it's slow-mo, speed, slow-mo, speed. And any time the coach, who's supposed to be like Mr. Badass, does anything, it's all sped up. And it's not like they didn't film it with him doing it really fluidly. So you can see immediately where like the speed ups are. It's like, whoa, his arm suddenly flailed really fast when he threw that kick. Ugh. Like the fighting sucks. And the final fight scene too. The dude, the bad guy comes out and he's shoeless. And you can see it's a full shot, like a wide shot of this guy walking out barefoot into the parking lot because like, oh, they're meant to fight in like this fucking underground. They found some random warehouse and then set up a huge sound studio in there with like a DJ to talk about like a bunch of high schoolers fighting. Right? Again, it's this weird thing. It's like it's all minors doing this. There's no like adult doing this. He comes out and he's barefoot, and then the final fight scene, he suddenly has shoes on when he throws like a kick, and then like for the rest of the choreography, they both have shoes on, and then the bad guy gets him in like a guillotine choke, standing guillotine choke, and he's looking down at his bare feet, and I was like, wait, where did his shoes go? And then as he's blacking out, he remembers that his like little brother is sad, and so he's in a standing a guillotine choke. He's like bent over. He reaches up with his arm and just like pulls the guy's head down into a choke, and the guy's like, "Aah!" and screaming as his like he gets like pulled down very slowly into a guillotine choke. And I'm like, this fucking sucks. Anyway, it was. It wasn't even like a good, enjoyable, bad movie. It was like, it was just so like, I don't even know what I'm watching. It's like, it's clearly not for people that watch UFC or like are just getting into MMA. Even like that 2008 Face the Pain, Just Bleed fan crowd. But it's also like, this isn't something like a 30-year-old would go into the theater and be like, oh, wow. Yeah. High schoolers. Cool. Like it didn't make any sense. And the only thing I can think is that it was definitely like paid for partially by like the Orlando Board of Tourism because of the amount of shots of like just like look at this housing development, look at this street, like definitely promotional material for like moving to Orlando. It was very bad. It was very bad and a waste of time, and not even bad in like I can pick this apart and like learn from its mistakes. You know, like it was just like wow, this. And then it got three sequels.
Yeah, yeah.
And Michael J. White directed two of them. I don't understand. I don't understand.
Oh my God.
Just a bad movie, man. And like
fantastic.
And so many like it's like I mean, because I could have just been here and got like recounted all the weird things, right? Like he's on the football team and like the way he like gets in a fight is the guy goes, "Huh, your dad, the sauce, that shit will kill you." And it's like What high schooler says the sauce, right? Like if his dad died of like a drunk driver, be like, oh yeah, like your dad's a bad driver, isn't he? You know, like that's more cutting than like the sauce. That shit'll kill you. I was like, who writes dialogue like this? It feels like it's so weird because I know it was written by a human because it came in 2008, but it feels like it was written by AI. Like it feels like it was written by AI. It was so bad. Yeah, it was. Oh yeah, and then like when he goes to the fucking
there's
fight.
More?
He's like, they're in the like the party, house, and there's naked women in the bathtub like kissing and making out, and people are watching that, and then they're like everyone's like drinking and playing beer pong, and like there's a dance battle in like the foyer, and then. The protagonist gets like taken to the back and he's like, well, this is where the real party is. Like, that's all for like losers. This is where the real shit is. And like, they look down on his massive lawn and there's like another 1,000 kids down there and they're all like, watching fighting. And he's like, yeah, it's great. We've got like the girl versus girl, guy versus guy, exes fighting, like man versus woman. And then sometimes we'll have a little bit of the black versus brown. And then there's a black kid and like an Indian kid or like a Latino kid and they're fighting each other. And I was like, whoa. You can't, that's fucked up, man. Like, I know we're in Florida, so, like, this level of racism flies, but, like, what are you talking about? You can't have, like, this is the racial part of our, like, fight night. Like, that's an insane thing to say. And then the protagonist, right after he says that, he goes, this is insane. And I was like, right? This whole plot of this movie, the protagonist immediately admits, like, this is crazy. Like, this cannot be a real life place. This is so stupid. Yeah, and then but then everyone at the high school knows that in Iowa his dad wrapped a car around a tree, and it's like it's even hard to know something about someone today, right? Like how in 2008 did they discover that? Like that's it from Iowa, right? What high school kid is like combing the internet, being like, "Ooh, maybe we'll find someone for me to fight in Iowa who has like daddy issues," right? Like what a weird dude. Oh, yeah, and then his gym membership for 2 months, unlimited training, was $200. And I was like, there's no MMA gym on earth that only costs $200 for 2 months' worth of training. That's bullshit. Yeah. Anyway, so it fucking sucked. And, like, not even in a fun way. It just didn't make sense.
That was great. I now have motivation to win.
To watch it?
No, to win all of our future bets now. If I'm just gonna make you watch random shitty movies like this and to get you rant on them on our podcast.
Well, but
now,
like great. Cradle to the Grave or like a bad Jet Li movie would be like interesting. But like this was just so. Again, yeah. Who was this for? Like it clearly wasn't for high schoolers. And it clearly like it felt like it was just for the guy who wrote it. Like he just wanted. He was trying to recreate the. High school experience he wished he had had, which was that there were like makeout parties and fucking like he lived in Florida and, you know, he was Mr. Badass who could like beat up anyone at any time, but he would only fight for righteousness. Like, it's like Karate Kid already existed too. Why did we need this? And this wasn't even like you could tell that this was like they were trying to do Karate Kid, but at the same time, it was like, did you not see like all of the endearing characters and the way that they set that up, right? Like, this is so silly. It felt like Karate Kid for someone that like owned too many Affliction shirts. Just bad, man.
All right. That's great. All right, take us home. I gotta wrap up. All
right. That movie fucking
sucks.
That's
great.
Don't watch it. Yeah. Jesus Christ. I'm one fight fan, I guess, Stuart.
And I'm the other, Colin.
And next time, we won't talk about Never Back Down. All right. Yeah. Christ alive.